relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
Welcome, dear friends, to one of our special discussions. Usually we introduce you to somebody we don't get a chance to talk to that regularly. Today we're doing something even more special than that. On One-to-One, me, Sebastian Gorka, It's America First, with our good friend, former attorney to President Trump, former constitutional law professor. She is, of course, Jenna Ellis. Jenna, welcome to One-on-One.
This is so exciting. I'm so grateful to have even more time to talk about all of the things that we need to discuss.
No. We don't have more time to talk about the things we usually discuss. We get our millions of listeners and viewers to get to know you better. We did this with one of our regulars last week, and I learned things as well. So let's start there. First things first. No. She's been trending on Twitter. We'll get to that. But first things first. Who is Jenna Ellis? And how did you get to the White House? How did you get to the chairmanship of the National Election Integrity Alliance? So tell our listeners where you hail from and what your journey has been.
Yes, well, according to the Wall Street Journal and all of the leftists, I came directly just from practicing an entry-level prosecutor position 10 years ago. Nothing happened in between. And then suddenly just popped up as an attorney for the president.
That's
which
weird.
Is laughable, right?
That's
and,
so weird.
And if that were true, I would be the greatest like jump in my career in the history of practice.
You'd be teaching that, how you go from that to there.
And if I was a Democrat at 34,
you'd be lauded.
This would be like amazing, right? So it's hilarious that the left doesn't actually see reality.
Well,
let's
ignore the left for a second. So what's the real story?
So the truth, of course, is that I am an attorney from Colorado and started in prosecution, transitioned to criminal defense when I saw all of the unethical political stuff that happens in, unfortunately, in even local politics. And so in being a defense attorney, I've done a ton of trials, been in litigation routinely. It was actually a really amazing ministry, frankly. So I am a very sincere Christian. Grew up, was homeschooled K through 12.
Now that explains everything. See, I'm learning stuff already. She was homeschooled. Now
yes. We
get it. Continue.
And I loved it. We had so much fun. My parents are amazing. And so
legal background, parents?
No, I'm the first attorney out of even my extended family, but my dad is literally a rocket scientist, so he has all of the really super smarts in the family.
That's the first real one I've heard of. I've mentioned it before, but I've never heard of rocket scientists until I met Jenna.
Yeah, he has the T-shirt that we gave him that says, actually, I am a rocket scientist. So, yeah, my dad is
great. That's great.
But homeschooling actually allows for you to grow up with not just with the peer pressure and all of that stuff that you get and all of the, you know, critical race theory and crazy things in the education world today, but actually focusing on what you'd like to do in your life and ministry. And so, you know, for me, I discovered my love of law when I was 14 because I actually had the opportunity to go and explore and discover other things besides just schoolwork. And so so I knew from the age of 14 that I wanted to be a lawyer.
So how did you meet a lawyer? Did you view something in a courtroom? What was
so
the impetus?
So there's a great program called Teen Pact Leadership Schools. It's like teens making an impact. And the whole purpose, specifically geared toward Christian students, is to teach about civics. So they go to, I think they're in almost all 50 states now, but they bring students for a week to their state capital and teach them all about the legislative branch. And then from there, you can go and do other events. I became, through that week, very interested in doing the judicial track. And so I went to this one-week program where we did a whole moot court situation, and we had briefs that we had to write. We had to basically pretend like we were appellate attorneys. And in thinking about and looking at what attorneys actually do and how you can advocate for the principles of truth, I loved it. And after that 1 week, I came home and said, hey, Mom and Dad, I want to be a lawyer. And I never intended to do what I'm doing now, but, you know, God Definitely, clearly showed me my path to being a lawyer when I was very young, which tells a lot of people out there. I mean, if you are a parent of a high school student, God can show you your calling at a very, very young age. And I'm really grateful that I had parents who always championed what I knew God had for me. And so as I moved through my career, I then, through teaching, through being able to practice in criminal defense, I also wrote a book on the Constitution, and it's called The Legal Basis for a Moral Constitution, a guide for Christians to understand America's constitutional crisis. And law school doesn't teach you the foundational principles that we often talk about on the show.
Which is outrageous.
They teach you that constitutional law means whatever the Supreme Court says that the law means. And so as a Christian, I wanted to have a better argument, a legal argument, to be able to advocate for our founding principles besides just my faith. Because obviously, the court will say, well, that's just your personal faith. We don't care. And leftists can say, well, I'm not a Christian. You know, shut up about your religion. So I wanted to have a legal argument. So this book is my legal argument. I started teaching constitutional law through that, was able to get media appearances. And one day I was a guest on a show called America First.
That's a great name for a show.
Isn't it, though? And you might have heard of the host, Sebastian Gorka.
Isn't that guy with a funny accent?
Yes, that I love to imitate.
Heard
when I have now been honored to be the guest host on that show. And so I was a guest there. And of course, you know, the president listens into this show and others. And so one day, just out of the blue, I get a call from a 202 number. And it's, hi, Ms. Ellis, this is the White House. The president's reaching out to you. Would you
please give us a call back? Warning here, okay? You don't have to pick up calls you don't recognize the number from. But if it's 202,
you probably should.
You might
want
to.
But see, I'm a 303 girl from Colorado, so I thought it was just a spam call. No. And it was like a Sunday afternoon.
Which is when he calls people he likes.
Right. And so so I pick someone. I'm thinking, what? This totally is not happening to me. So I call back and I say, hi, I'm not sure that this was intended for me, but I got this voicemail. And oh, yeah, we'll put you right through. And President Trump gets someone goes, Jenna, how's it going? You have this great title in media, you know, constitutional law attorney. I love it. And your explanations of the Constitution are just so great and profound. And I have some questions for you. I'd love to just talk with you. And so we spent over an hour on the phone.
On that first phone call.
And I'm sitting here thinking, this is the only chance I'll ever get to talk to the president of the United States. I'm just going to tell him my honest opinions to all of the questions that he asked. So I told him that his lawyers were risk averse, that, the swamp is terrible.
When is this about?
This is in around September of 2019. So right before, as people were gearing up for the first impeachment. So I was at the time on his campaign's advisory board. So I was doing media hits as a constitutional law subject matter expert, also, you know, obviously as an attorney, and on behalf of the campaign, even though it was in my private capacity. So he had seen me advocate for him and his campaign at that point. So we spent an hour on the phone, and he ended with saying, you know, so when are you in D.C.? Come see me. And I was like, I will be there anytime you ask. So probably about a week or so later, I walked into the Oval Office, and he gets up from behind the amazing Resolute desk that I was so privileged to see in person. And he comes around and shakes my hand and says, Jenna, so great to meet you. You're such a brilliant lawyer, and you work for me now. And I said, okay. And I've been in D.C. ever since, and that's how he does things. And
that's exactly what I
experienced. An amazing, amazing person that I was, and president that I was so privileged to work for, advise, advocate for, and someone I'm still very proud to call my friend. And so I am, you know, just an ordinary girl who loves the Constitution, loves the law, has advocated in the realm of constitutional law, has taught constitutional law, has been in a lot of litigation, tons of trials, and now has been able to have the experience of working for a sitting president of the United States. And I'll continue to advocate for conservatism, truth, and President Trump.
She says she's ordinary. There is nothing ordinary about this lady. She's the author of The Legal Basis for a Moral Constitution, former presidential attorney. She's also, we'll talk about this, let's put this in her chyron next, Eric. She is the chair of the Election Integrity Alliance. That story is such a great story. It's almost exactly the same as my experience back in, oh my gosh, July of 2015, when I get a phone call out of the blue. He's not president yet. He's just candidate Mr. Trump. And I get asked to go to Trump Tower in New York by somebody called Corey Lewandowski. I didn't know who he was. And I said, okay. And we have a conversation about, you name it, from the Civil War to nuclear weapons. Halfway through the conversation, President Trump stops it dead. There's only three of us in the room, me, Corey, and the future president. And he stops talking at me, turns to Corey and says, I like this guy. Let's hire him. And that's how it works. Sign this NDA and we're off to the races and doing some stuff for a man who will become the 45th president of the United States. And the rest is history. So much more to discuss. I've got a long list of things I want to discuss with her. In the meantime, make sure you're following this lady, Jenna Ellis ESQ, on social media platforms. It's Jenna Ellis Esquire. Follow her today. This is One-on-One with me, Sebastian Gorka, former strategist to the President of the United States. Don't forget, if you're enjoying this, give us a review, hit the subscribe button, hit the notifications bell, and tell your friends all about it. Jenna, let's talk about the sad news of the state of the legal profession in America.
Yes.
So we have some good news from the, well, it seemed like good news, let me preface it like that, that thanks to Mitch McConnell, the Federalist Society, and a lot of eager beavers, the 4 years of the Trump administration saw close to 300 federal judges nominated and confirmed, and then, of course, three associate Supreme Court justices nominated and confirmed. This was deemed by many to be the most important long-term effect of the Trump administration. I have to say, as a non-lawyer, I studied a little bit of international law in my postgrad studies, I am woefully disappointed with the results of all of that, given the election last year, the amount of cowardice, given the Supreme Court's inability to even hear the Texas case. So will you give us your insider's opinion of the state of the legal profession and also the importance of courage when practicing law?
Absolutely. And, you know, the Federalist Society just needs to retire, in my opinion.
What happened?
So, you know, they are so swampy, for lack of a more just on-the-nose term. And I say that, you know, I'm an ordinary person because, like you, Seb, you and I contrast that to the elitists, right, to the swamp people. We are people who love America and who are in our respective professions to actually make a difference and to uphold the principles of America, of truth, of God and country, of things that used to just be ingrained in our society. And unfortunately, the swamp and the GOP and the elitists that are here, they don't see that same distinction. They don't have anything other than power that they're after and money. And
they like being part of the establishment.
Absolutely they do. And the GOP is part of that. And Trump changed all of that. And the perspective here is that, you know, Trump is not a lawyer. And so coming in, like, if I became president, I would have to have advisors in certain areas that I'm not familiar with. And so he relied on, reasonably and totally appropriately, on the Federalist Society to make those recommendations because that's who he was told had the best judicial input. And he had input from a lot of my good friends. But the problem with that and what we're seeing in the disappointment on the court in the GOP establishment is that they don't want to elect candidates or put people on the bench who will be radically so dedicated to the U.S. Constitution over anything else. They don't want principled people. They want political operatives. And
they don't want to rock the boat.
Exactly. And that was exactly what President Trump did want to do. And so in the state of the legal profession, and if you look at what happened to my colleague Rudy Giuliani in New York, it is so absurd to think that just because an attorney is advocating for their client or has an opinion on politics, like me over the last weekend saying that Joe Biden should be impeached for impeachable offenses, and I specified them. There is a mob on Twitter now calling literally for my disbarment to say I shouldn't be able to practice law just because I have political viewpoints that are public. This is the state of America that the GOP is tacitly endorsing because they refuse to actually be radical patriots and stand up for principled American jurisprudence, for the Constitution, and to put people on the bench and in office who will actually be principled rather than just party operatives. And that's what President Trump ran into in his administration, where all the people, I mean, we can fight the enemy, the opposition party, easily. That's the obvious fight. But the fight that was going on was internal. And it was, and you saw this as well, with advisors, with the RNC, with the GOP. I mean, I had people, when he would call me and ask, you know, ask my opinion on a legal matter, I would give him my best advice based on the law and the Constitution. If he asked for my opinion beyond that, then I'm happy to give it to him as an advisor. But I would tell him, here are your options constitutionally. And inevitably, about 10 minutes after we hang up the phone, I would always get a phone call from one of his other lawyers, White House counsel, you know, somebody else, calling, literally yelling at me, saying, why are you telling him he can do X? And I'm like, because he can. And I would yell back and say, are you literally going to tell me he doesn't have that option? Well, we told him, you know, if you're saying he has option A, B, C, we only told him A. And I said, yeah, because that's the option you want him to pick. That's the state of legal practice right now, is not being an advocate and having a substantive interest in doing
fighters.
Your job.
It's not being fighters.
No, and it's also being totally unethical. Yeah. Because as a lawyer, I have an obligation and responsibility to my client.
Right. And to tell
not
him all
to
the
myself.
Options.
Yes. And to answer his question to the best of my ability. But his own lawyers weren't doing that. They were political operatives. Yeah. And that is the only reason that Trump didn't get even more done, was because when we had the majority, we, the Republicans, the so-called conservatives, had the majority in the House and the Senate for the first 2 years of President Trump's administration, they blocked him every step of the way. You don't think we could have passed so much judicial reform, pro-life measures, immigration reform, all of this stuff, but no. They wanted to block him from actually creating change in Washington because they are the problem. The RNC is DNC light. And that's the unfortunate truth about it. And so when you look at the Federalist Society, bring this back to your original question, when you look at the Federalist Society and the judges that have been so weak-bellied, and the justices of the Supreme Court, like Roberts, who, of course, wasn't a Trump appointee, but he was the worst thing that President Bush ever did.
Ever did.
When he has this view that you can't be political, and therefore, we're not going to take up a controversial case that, by the way, the Constitution mandates us to under original jurisdiction because it might look political, you are becoming political. Where is your obligation to your oath of office?
Not hearing the Texas case with, what, 17 other states?
Yes.
Is a political decision.
It's absolutely political, and it is unconstitutional. And by the way, those justices, the seven of them that said no, because only Thomas and Alito voted to hear it because they understood their obligation, all seven of the others should be impeached and removed for that.
I have to ask you, if it weren't up to the Federalist Society, would we be able to find enough pugilistic lawyers to become good judges? Are they out there?
I think so. And you know who they are? They're people like you and me that are the ordinary lawyers who understand the Constitution. They don't have, you know, the big names. They're not on the radar of Washington, D.C.
So go to Wyoming, go to Dakota, find good lawyers.
Yeah, like find the people like the Van Dyke. I think it's Michael Van Dyke, who was one of the attorneys.
Oh, yes.
During
on
the second impeachment.
Yes.
Who was a regular trial lawyer.
Yeah.
Who was brilliant and who actually understood his obligation.
Not a swamp creature.
And he didn't care about the media interviews. He didn't care about anything. He just cared about justice for his client and actually advocating for the principles of the Constitution. People like him need to be on the bench.
So I have to ask you, why is Jenna Ellis trending on Twitter all weekend? What's going on?
Well, because I made the audacious claim that Joe Biden should be impeached for what? Going against the Constitution. And in several respects, his administration, with the CDC moratorium, and Twitter is trying to say it's only over the border crisis. That's only one issue that when he is not fulfilling his oath of office and he is not administering the law of immigration, which, by the way, he can't set. That's up to Congress. Yes. And he refuses to close the border. He refuses to protect the citizens of this nation. Yes, that's unconstitutional. Yes, he can be impeached for that. But also the CDC moratorium on evictions, that was decided by the Supreme Court to be unconstitutional. Joe Biden even admitted to a reporter that he knows it's probably illegal. And he said, but we're going to do it anyway, and hope that they get a month or two because judges are slow. This is someone who is purposefully, not even in good faith. There are things that presidents and executive branch officials do all the time that can be challenged in court, can be, you know, ruled as unconstitutional, but at least they did it in a good faith basis. And that's what the judicial branch is for. But for Joe Biden to say and admit he knows that it's unconstitutional and he's doing it anyway, that is a violation of his oath of office. And if that is not actually treason or other high crimes and misdemeanors to say I am intentionally violating the supreme law of the land, then I don't know what is.
So let's drill down on this. You're not the first person to say this. Marjorie Taylor Greene called on my radio show for the impeachment. I think she was the first person to call for the impeachment of Joe Biden. I have this massive bumper sticker.
It doesn't. I love it.
There's no vehicle with a bumper big enough to have this bumper sticker she gave me. Eric, can you show everybody the impeach Biden bumper sticker? Thank you. So let's walk through this. You can't impeach a president unless you have a majority in the House and unless you have a supermajority in the Senate to actually convict him. So what is the utility? And I'm not against it, because a lot of things have to come out. What is the utility of even floating the idea if you don't have the numbers? Is this prepping the battlefield for a success in the midterms?
Absolutely. And it's also revealing who is willing to stand up for truth in the Constitution from the GOP, because anyone who's not willing to sign on to articles of impeachment from the GOP is outing themselves as a rhino completely. And I want to be clear, this is not just a tit for tat situation where, oh, we just want to impeach Biden because Trump was impeached on a false basis. No, I have been an advocate for the Constitution, for the rule of law. And if we are conservatives and conserving our rule of law, then when our chief executive violates the U.S. Constitution, violates his oath of office, commits impeachable offenses while in office, it is a duty and obligation of Congress to hold him accountable. That's what the impeachment clause is for. It shouldn't be political. So at this point, I think that the voters and the conservative base are so tired of the weak, spineless rhino Republicans that they want to see, okay, where do you stand? The best thing that President Trump does is that you can't ride the fence with President Trump.
Yeah.
He reveals where do people actually stand. And so if articles of impeachment, even in the minority, were filed now, we would see a clear indication of where the field stands, and also, I think, give people hope for 2022, that when the conservatives and some, you know, Republicans, I don't like to use this term simultaneously, when we win back the majority in 2022, then we can actually file that knowing we'll have the majority votes.
All right, let's talk about the biggest issue that he could be theoretically impeached for. Let's talk about the election last year, whether there is any way to tie the irregularities, the problems, the unfolded mail-in ballots, the lack of data logs for the chain of custody. Where does all this stand? Do you have hope that there will be anything coming out of the numerous audits occurring across America?
I hope that the thing that comes out of the audits is that the legislatures actually pass resolutions that recognize and say as a statement from the legislature that they were falsely certified, that they were not certified according to the laws of their state.
Because they didn't do their job.
Because they didn't do their job.
The state houses.
The states, yes. And the only reason right now that Donald Trump is not in office is because of the weak Republican state legislators. And the argument that I made to them from the constitutional standpoint was that when your elections are run so manifestly, obviously, and just completely disastrously against the laws of your own state, it's your obligation to reclaim your delegates and send a slate according to whomever the state legislature picks. That's what our system is all about. And so, and they all failed to do that because they wanted judicial cover. And of course, the judiciary didn't want to be political. And so everybody panicked. Everybody was a coward. And if our system was functioning properly and we actually had statesmen in office, then they would have done the right thing, the constitutional thing. They would have done their duty with courage. We talked about the importance of courage, regardless of the political backlash. I don't care what people call me on Twitter. I don't care if people are calling for me to get disbarred, whatever. I don't care. I care about my principles. I care about advocating for the Constitution. I care about standing up for truth. And if a state legislator can't even do that after all of these audits, then those states need to put different people in office who will have the courage to stand up.
Right.
So that's what I hope comes out of this, because then we can move forward with a potential remedy.
And that's up to us. Jenna, we've talked about the amazing work. We haven't talked enough about the amazing work you have done. Rudy Giuliani, Joe DiGenova, Victoria Tunsing, Boris Epstein, the people on the ground. But you mentioned Rudy, and I want to do this as much as possible. Guys, they're coming after him first. They want to take him down, America's mayor. Please support him. There is a GoFundMe page. It's the Rudy Giuliani Freedom Fund. Go there, donate whatever you can to support this man, because the left wants to destroy the former mayor of New York. That's Rudy Giuliani FreedomFund.com. Okay. Here's the bad news. You are battling, and I've witnessed it, you are battling some people around the president who do not have his best interests at heart and who aren't patriots and who are cowards. What can we do about that?
Well, that ultimately comes down to what will Trump do about it. And I think that his base and all of the people who love and support him, who love and support this country, need to continually call out the RNC, call out these people, call out these individuals.
You've called for Rona McDaniel to resign.
Absolutely. And Justin Reimer, who is the chief counsel, who did not support election integrity, was in fact trying to undermine everything we were working on behalf of the president, while the RNC was telling all of their donors that they were fighting for him. So it was completely fraudulent. And this is the RNC. All they care about is their own money and their own power. And they've even said that they raise more when a Democrat is in office anyway, so let's just let this go.
This is Reimer himself who emailed that, who said, we make more money when our guy loses. This is the person Rona McDaniel said she would fire last November, never did. Still there, and now she's denying it. She's denying she ever made that promise or those emails exist.
And she denied. I literally texted her the email that he says, you know, this is what they're doing is a joke. The statement, that was a statement that was made to the RNC about the DNC fundraising war. Just to clarify, that wasn't in an email that I've seen, but I was told by a source, a very credible source in the RNC. And so, but the emails that we do have show that he was completely undermining us. And he's even admitted that. And he's admitted that subsequently. But Rana is completely lying about it because she knew. And this is where the RNC does not have the interests of conservatism, the interests of Donald Trump in mind. And I don't think, and I have told the president this, we have told the president this, that he does not need the RNC.
No.
Because the people who love and support him, because we love and support the country, the Constitution, America First principles, we are going to champion conservatism regardless of what the RNC does. They need us much more then we need
them. Well, look, this is another version of what you're saying, but when I was in the White House and after I left the White House, I said repeatedly, and I still hold it to be true, that Donald Trump won despite the GOP and not thanks to the GOP. And nothing's changed.
Oh, 100%. And so what can we do about it? We can stop donating to the RNC. We can call for Rana and Justin's resignation. We can support candidates that are genuine conservatives. Like, look at the Ohio primary for Senate right now. You have an RNC-supported candidate that's literally paying people to be social media influencers that aren't disclosing that, has a lot of support from the RNC, but used to be and still is a never-Trumper. J.D. Vance, right? He even said in an interview...
Oh, I like J.D. Vance.
And
J.D.
I do
Vance
too.
Has turned around,
well,
and he's admitted his mistakes.
Although, he said in an interview just a month ago, he said, well, I guess I'm going to have to get on board. I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but you can go and read the interview for yourself. He said, you know, I guess supporting Trump is what I have to do in order to win this election.
Yeah, and I'd like to see that, because as far as I'm concerned,
I will send it to you.
He's genuine. J.D.
Well,
Vance,
and I hope so. I hope so. But he was, and again, I have nothing against people who initially did not support him. I was one of them. I supported Ted Cruz until I understood what President Trump was all about. I totally changed. I was never a never Trumper, right? So absolutely people can change. I've tweeted about J.D. Vance positively saying, hey, same thing, right? I believe him. That he has changed. But the issue is that he has a lot of money and influencers from the RNC, because there are other candidates like Josh Mandel, for example, that the RNC doesn't like because he's too much of a Christian conservative, quote unquote, radical, right? And so they are never going to support those types of candidates who actually want to go in having no ties to the swamp. So the best thing we can do, as much as we, you know, may like J.D. Vance or not, we need to support the candidates that are not beholden to the RNC.
Okay. Well, I wouldn't say J.D. Vance is beholden to the RNC because he's not a swamp creature. Some people in the RNC may like him, but the fact is he's a very successful author, former Marine, and a guy who understands America First. And I've had long discussions with him on my show and otherwise.
I'd love to see him come out. And actually, I asked on Twitter for him to comment on the FEC report that he has influencers that were paid that did not disclose. He won't say anything about it. He won't say anything about his recent comment about a month ago. So that concerns me. And I think he's a great candidate on other things, but that concerns me. And when people are getting money, the reason that President Trump had no ties to anyone in Washington is because he refused to take money from those people. He funded his own campaign. He had other donors. And so what I'm saying is this is an example of someone who may get to Washington, and have allegiances to the people who helped him get there. Mm. And so we need to support candidates outside the RNC so that when they get to Washington, they work for us, not the RNC.
All right, send me that stuff. I'll check it out, and then I'll ask JD on air.
You are a
woman of faith. You've always made that apparent in your public statements, in your social media stance. I have to ask you this, given your constitutional law credentials. Do we have a chance of overturning Roe v. Wade? How's it looking?
Absolutely, we do. And I think that the Mississippi case that has actually been accepted, and it was sitting on the court's docket for a really long time, which is interesting. And so the fact that the justices are now choosing to take this up with a very broad, open-ended certified question to the court, it's just whether pre-viability abortions are unconstitutional. And that it gives them a lot of room to rule and significantly undercut and undermine Roe versus Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey, which is Roe's progeny. And the easiest way for them to do this, very simply, is to say, listen, this is not an issue that is given to the federal government to decide. It is a state-level issue. And if they just ruled on the basis of federalism purely, which they've done in recent history on other issues, then it would go back to the states. And 41 states right now have basically trigger laws that if something like that happened, then immediately their law would prevent many abortions, not entirely all abortions, which we need to get to that point. We need to make abortions unthinkable, not just illegal. just because they're unconstitutional, but because it is the intentional, it's a medical intervention intentionally designed to kill an unborn child. That's what an abortion is. And so I think the Supreme Court absolutely has a constitutional out here, and I'm hoping that they will not just take the easy out, that they will actually completely gut Roe and say that the government has a compelling interest in protecting life. However, they have an out in federalism that would still accomplish 98% of the same purposes. So we'll see how that goes.
Given the lack of courage of the Supreme Court last year when it came to the Texas case on the election, do you think they have the courage to make a significant decision on Roe v. Wade?
That is a great question, and we'll see. I'm very interested. I mean, the good thing is that we don't need Roberts for a 5-4 decision. We do have individuals in Kavanaugh and in Gorsuch that have been very strong on other issues, but they've been really weak on other ones. Yeah. So I'm hopeful, but we need to pray. We absolutely have to pray that the Supreme Court would find their spine and they would do the right constitutionally, morally appropriate thing.
We're talking to Jenna Ellis. Follow her right now. Jenna Ellis, ESQ on all platforms. Also, Just the Truth podcast. Also, my colleague at Newsmax. You read my mind, Jenna. In response to my question on Roe v. Wade, you finished by saying, we need to pray. We need to pray that we have or that the Supreme Court has the courage to deal with this and to hear it. What is the role of faith in all of the issues we've discussed? What is the role of faith in the current political situation, the divide we find America in? What is the role of faith in the workings of law in this, the greatest experiment in democracy we've ever seen?
It's foundational. It's inextricably intertwined with conservatism, with government, with everything we're doing. There is no separation of church and state in the context and the sense that the left would have you buy into that. All they meant is that there are different roles. Pastors and priests are not government officials, nor are government officials the head of the church. They are separate spheres of authority, just like the family and parental rights are very different than government officials or pastors. But faith and understanding the principles of the Word of God that show us truth, this is the only way to have genuine freedom and liberty. True liberty and justice for all cannot be accomplished without recognizing, as our founders did, that there is self-evident truth, that our rights come from God, our creator, not our government. And the sole purpose of government is to preserve and protect those rights. If our government understood our charter of our Declaration of Independence and understood the only legitimate and proper role of government in the civil society, we would see the abolishment of so many perversions.
Yeah.
Of our civil society. The only way, for example, that we get rid of racism in our laws is to understand that there is only one race. Human beings are all equal, made in the image of God with inherent dignity and worth. It is only the left that tries to classify people and say, you are guilty just on the basis of your skin tone. There is systemic racism. We want to prop up equality means there has to be one equal outcome. None of that is in accordance with reality or with the principles of self-evident truth. And so the role of faith is absolutely central to having a comprehensive view of what it means to be a conservative. If you are a conservative only meaning that you buy into capitalism, but you are pro-choice and you are, you know, well, I'm for this, but I'm not for that, and you don't have a comprehensive, foundational, principled basis, then your arguments will break down. You can't have a meaningful, principled argument for capitalism without undercutting yourself if it's a government based only on consent and the government's only obligation is to arbitrate contract disputes. Because then what do you do with all of the moral questions, right, of human sexuality? What do you do with drugs? What do you do with all of these other things that civil society must touch and concern? You don't then have true meaningful justice. So we have to get back to our principles of faith. Pastors have to be teaching from the pulpits these principles of truth. They can't shy away. Just, I mean, who cares about your tax exemption status? The IRS has never actually come after anyone based on that. Even if they did, do you care more about that or fulfilling your obligation to teach truth? I don't care if I get fired, censored, anything else. I will stand up for truth and I will continue speaking truth because I have courage and I know that my only sole audience is Jesus Christ, my Lord and Savior. And everyone needs to understand that if you want to make a difference in this country, you have to be bold for truth, regardless of the consequences.
It's a great way to think about it. Your only audience that matters is your Lord and Savior. Last question. Last time we met with President Trump, you heard me give my advice to him with regards to the last election and the putative results of any audits. I said he has to jettison this concept of reinstatement and he has to use the results as part of his platform for running in 2024. And I am convinced of the fact he will run in 2024. What is Jenna Ellis's? That was a couple of months ago. What is your considered opinion of the best way to proceed when it comes to legal questions concerning last November? What is the tack President Trump should follow?
Well, I think he needs to come out very clearly and state that he will follow constitutional options only. There are a lot of ideas out there, a lot of things that the Constitution simply doesn't provide for. And as a conservative, as someone who has always stayed within the margins of the Constitution, that is very important. And with that, it is always important to get to the truth. And so supporting these audits are fantastic, supporting resolutions to decertify, to say, no, those certifications were not accurate to get to Congress. Once that happens, then we can have a conversation about what the remedy should be. But reinstatement, as some have suggested, is not a constitutionally viable option. And when there are some who are suggesting that, it takes away from the genuine solutions for election integrity that we can't actually provide for. And that was part of the problem in the post-November stuff, where there were some people who had such outlandish ideas.
And still do.
And still do. That then it took the media could be so easily distracted and say, look at this, look how absurd this is, and completely ignore the genuine opportunity that we do have. So I would agree with you that I think that President Trump would be best served focusing on what he can accomplish, focusing, yes, on election justice for November. And that starts with getting to the truth and showing all of this through the audits. Showing this even in further litigation, but also focusing his efforts on 2024 and saying, and I think that he will run as well. I think that he's going to wait to announce that a little bit more and probably after he sees how 2022 goes. But we have to remain grounded in the principles of the Constitution, in rational reality, and preserving our constitutional republic, because just because the Democrats cheated and they ignore the Constitution, that does not give us license to try to circumvent the Constitution or tear it down to say, well, the Democrats tore it down anyway. Right. And that's not what President Trump is saying, but that's what some of his supporters are saying. And I also want to really quick, this is the quote from J.D. Vance.
Mm-hmm.
He said in an interview with Time magazine just about a month ago, I'm not just a flip-flopper, I'm a flip-flopper on Trump, ... If I actually care about these people and the things I say I care about, I need to just suck it up and support him. That, to me, does not sound like someone who's actually changed his mind. That sounds like someone who's saying, I'm going to suck it up and support him, even though
yeah,
I still hate
I'd say one so, thing. I'd say one so. Thing about that. And I will read that quote back to J.D. I wouldn't trust anything that Time publishes, ever.
But if that's his quote.
No. I know that.
So
I know that. And I will take it to him. But Time, I couldn't care less what Time writes.
Oh, 100%.
It's like Washington Post, CNN,
irrelevant. I don't care about that. What I care about is the fact that he said those words. And I would like to know what he meant by that. Because just sucking it up. And he has not publicly come out and said, hey, Time magazine was wrong. That's not what I said. it's in an interview. So that to me is problematic. And I sent that to you. Yes.
Thank you, Jenna Ellis. Went far too quickly. Follow her, Jenna Ellis ESQ, Just the Truth podcast, and regularly on Newsmax. As ever, dear friends, keep your head on a swivel. Watch your six. Hold the line. Never give up. Never give in. And stay frosty.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.